It's been over 20 years since Mel Gibson's epic blockbuster, The Passion of the Christ, hit theaters. On September 10th, The Passion returns to theaters once again for a limited engagement. Tonight, two classic world-over interviews from the set of The Passion with Mel Gibson and Jim Caviezel. The World Over begins right now.
Now, Raymond DeRoy.
A warm welcome to all of you joining us in the United States and the world over as we celebrate our 30th year. We have a great show for you this evening. If you'd like to comment, send me an X post. I'm at Raymond Arroyo and always at Arroyo Grande Show on YouTube. On February 25th, 2004, Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ hit theaters, becoming one of the biggest independent films ever. It grossed well over $600 million worldwide. It remains the benchmark of faith-based filmmaking and has become an annual devotion for millions during their Lenten season. I sat down with Mel Gibson and Jim Caviezel on the set of The Passion during the original shoot at the legendary Cinecittà Studios outside of Rome. In the midst of Studio 5 at Cinecittà, a long-haired figure appears to be in prayer. He is the actor Jim Caviezel, awaiting his cue to enter Gethsemane. In moments, says Jesus, he will be arrested for the opening shot of The Passion. On the other side of the studio, surrounded by Herod's guard, Mel Gibson is engaged in his own athletic directing style. He tries to help the actors see the bold, at times stark vision that is, for the moment, confined to his head. This kinetic approach surpasses the performance of the day players. What becomes quickly apparent is the passion of the actor-director himself. Gibson is director, co-author, and sole financier of the entire project. The question is, why? Why would one of Hollywood's biggest stars take on a film he himself has described as a career killer? What is his vision? And how is this Jesus picture different from the others? I recently sat down with Gibson to get some answers. Mel, there are roughly 100 Jesus movies. Why do we need another one?
100? I didn't know there was that many. Wow. They just dug up another one from 1916.
101.
Yeah, they just found it, and it was like, it's one of the first ones ever on film. It's incredibly naive, but it's really kind of interesting to watch it. They go through the entire life in, like, it's less than an hour. It's like, wow. It's like, rockets
by. That went by fast.
I don't think it's ever been told as it should be. I don't think it's ever been adhered to in the way.
In what way?
It suffers either, in most cases that I've seen, and I haven't seen all 100, so I could be wrong here, but I've seen like probably the big dozen.
Sure, sure.
And accuracy, historical accuracy, as far as the Gospels go, accuracy is. As far as the extent of not only the political turmoil and everything that was going on at the time, but just the extent of the sacrifice and the torture involved, which is like, it's no mistake about it. This is graphic.
Right.
And I would never even recommend that anyone under the age of 12 go and see it, because it's hard.
Right.
But, you know, anybody that does go and see it and sits through it, I think, and my aim is to profoundly change people with it.
Yeah, that's my question. Why restrict yourself to just the last 12 hours?
Because that's the kind of pinnacle of the sacrifice. I think that's where a lot was achieved. And to try and commit more than that to film, it's almost an impossible task.
Yeah.
But to focus on the high point, or the low point, if you like, of leading up to the climax of the whole thing, where it all just happens, I think. Also, I can feed back into previous scenes. You know, there's flashbacks to little pieces of scenes that suggest and remind people who are familiar with the material, if you can call it that, exactly, you know, where it all came from.
And what this all really means. It sort of underscores, and I read the script, there's a lot of attention to the Last Supper.
There is.
As you go along. Uh-huh. Why visually cast it in that way?
Well, Well, I wanted to juxtapose the sacrifice of the cross with the sacrifice of the altar, which is the same thing, and just kind of demonstrate that.
Yeah.
That as he's being tortured and murdered and killed and everything, that you cut back in through the eyes of John, who's at the foot of the cross, you just cut back to him remembering, like, oh yeah, with the bread and the wine and the, I get it. So that the penny drops for him at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know whether the penny did drop for him at that point or not, but I think he was a pretty smart guy, and maybe it did.
Where did this passion develop? Where did it originate? What was the moment when you said, I want to do this story? 10 years ago, right?
Roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more like 12 or 13 years ago, I think it was.
Was there an incident, one moment?
I became acquainted with certain books and things. I started reading them, and I think, I would have been about 34, 35 at the time. And I think it's one of those places, like, every 7 years you change pretty, you know, profoundly. And it was at that point I was like, you know, what's my life about? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and it's
like
starting to look into things that I had a knowledge of but really hadn't explored as fully as I should have. So I began to look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Read all the Gospels, read the New Testament, read the Old Testament, read the, you know, and just started to go through all that and explore that. And through just trying to maintain myself, focus on that. And then it started to become for me. And the way I look at things is, I think one of my gifts is that I have a gift for imagery, and so that I would imagine it like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, what was that like, really? What was that? And so.
And there's a lot of Emmerich in here.
There is, yeah.
But how did you come across her?
I thought it was Roland Emmerich.
No, not Roland Emmerich. Catherine Emmerich.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Probably a relative of his. She was also German, and she was a nun, you know, who was a...
suffered a great deal.
She did. She had the marks of the stigmata. She had 5 wounds,
uh-huh.
and then, plus the head wounds, you know, everything.
Yeah.
She used to... and she'd go into... She'd have visions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a poet was sent to take down what her visions were. She didn't desire that it be written down, mm-hmm. but her superior ordered that she tell this guy. And he was an agnostic, but he wasn't by the time he'd finished. He was like totally like blown away by the whole experience of having to sit with her and her relating what she saw.
Why do you think you are uniquely qualified to direct this project?
I don't know. I have no idea. It's just a desire to do it, and I don't see anyone else doing it. So
mm-hmm.
in the absence of anyone better, I'm chosen, I guess.
You know, you did Braveheart. You got 2 Academy Awards. Director, best picture, 5 Academy Awards, sorry. But you, thanks.
Just thought I'd remind
you. Yeah, that's fine. Just remind me. 5. 2 that you, 2 that are on your shelf, no doubt. Maybe all 5 of them are there. I don't know.
No.
You have to invite me over to see. But
I just have enough to breed with.
You mean you're cloning these babies somewhere?
No, you put them in a cupboard for a couple of months. You come back and there's 3, you know. I don't know how that happens.
That's nice. Well, send one over. I'll adopt it.
This is inappropriate for your viewers.
That's perfectly appropriate for my viewers. Hey, if I can ask bad questions, you can give funny answers. It's okay.
Okay.
Braveheart comes out, 5 Academy Awards, I corrected myself.
Yeah.
Usually when a director has a follow-up to a picture like that,
mm-hmm.
Hollywood rolls out the red carpet, and to be honest, they produce great little fluff pieces. This is not receiving that sort of acclaim. They're saying the strangest Hollywood project to come along in years. Why
really?
The icy reception? Why that weird suspicion?
Well, it's not done in a language that they understand, and it's dealing with material that could be dangerous. It's dangerous material.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the single event that probably influenced civilization
mm-hmm.
as we know it
mm-hmm.
now. Even in the negative aspect, in some way, you could say that it goes back to that. I mean, it's you know, created our laws and behavior and you know, the knowledge of good and evil and all that kind of stuff. It's influenced art. And literature and every, it's affected every possible aspect of anyone's life, whether they know it or not, it has.
Mm-hmm.
And so that this is big stuff you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be graphic and it's going to be accurate as I can make it. It has areas of poetic license that I've added to it
mm-hmm.
that I see as not unreasonable.
Right.
And
Now, some would say, why do you have to be so graphic? That removes the art. That kills the imagination that we can all apply to this.
No, no.
By being so on the nose, Mel.
No, it's a puzzle that I have. I think what I have to do is be truthful to the to take you through suffering with it.
Mm-hmm.
The audience has to suffer to understand it more. And what I'm seeking here is a deeper understanding of this event. And as well as being graphic and probably in your face a little bit,
mm-hmm.
It's not always like that. I mean, I use a certain art to get around some of that. And I think that even in the more horrific aspects of it, I've tried to incorporate a beauty to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's a balance.
And you've pulled back a little bit from what your original intention for this. I mean, originally,
if I put down exactly what happened, it's too hard to take.
Mm-hmm. And you found that in the doing. Once you were shooting it, or you laid it out, and you said, "I can't go there."
Some parts, yeah, and like you know, I mean, you know, you're not going to see every foot and hand get nailed and stuff, but you'll certainly know it's going on. You won't see every hit of the whip, but you'll know it's happening. And when it does happen, it's going to be in a very realistic. When you do see it, it'll be very realistic. So you won't quite know when you're going to see it, and when you're not, which will add to the sort of, I suppose, you know, gripping the armchair thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I know it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but it's the way I want to present it, and it speaks to me that way, and that's all I know.
You said in a recent interview, when you approach this sort of material, this subject, you draw enemies.
Sure.
What did you mean by that?
Well, I think there is. In the world, there is good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who wants to tell a story of this magnitude about the nature of good and evil is going to draw people who are influenced by something dark. And it's going to come and afflict you in some way. And I'm not just talking about only people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about a whole other realm, because I believe in these realms. You know,
right.
I believe there's realms outside our own. If I didn't... then I would wonder about the point of this here,
mm-hmm.
now, breathing.
Mm-hmm.
If there isn't something else outside this realm, then I'm a little late on world conquest, is all I'm trying to say, and total subservience of every living creature to my will. So, I mean, that's a really harsh way of putting it.
But I got it. But there's something bigger than this.
If there's not something bigger than this, why am I trying?
Tell me about the authenticity of this film.
Well, it's I'm trying to make it as authentic as I possibly can, right down to the clothing,
yeah.
right down to the eating customs of the Jews of the old law,
mm-hmm.
And to make it truly about people, a man born into the house of David,
mm-hmm.
In Jerusalem. I mean, the Pharisees are all there, and
so God, when I saw Jim the other day, this is the most Jewish looking Christ I've seen on film.
Well, he should be.
You know, normally he looks so Aryan. I mean, gosh.
Sure, yeah. They usually got the blue-eyed guy. And Jim has blue eyes, yes.
Yes, he does.
But I'm going to change that.
Mm-hmm.
Digitally, I'll make his eye color different. It'll be more like that Coptic look, you know? And, of course, we fiddled with his facial features a bit.
Right.
Made him look like he comes from a more rugged time and make him look like he comes from the Middle East. He looks Semitic the way he looks
right.
Semitic. The woman playing his mother, she's Romanian, and she's Jewish, and she's just beautiful. There's great big soulful brown eyes, you know. And she's giving it everything. She's amazing, you know.
Talk to me about the Marian component here. The Mary is really a key figure in this. Normally, she fades to the background. You don't see her till the final end of the reel.
Yeah, right.
She's here every step of the way.
She goes
through.
Why
was that important?
Because I think she suffered as much, almost. I mean, she didn't have to bear the wounds and stuff, but imagine if it was your child.
Yeah.
And not only that, but your child who you know is a deity. I mean, imagine that, what that's doing to you, you know? So I thought it was absolutely necessary to sort of put her right there in the front row to watch the whole thing and to see her sort of bear it and to see her suffer it. She's done a remarkable job, you know?
Do you think some of the, and there have been those, perhaps quietly at this point, who say, you know, Mel Gibson's totally crazy to do a project like this. What's he doing?
Yeah.
Do you think that's religiously motivated? Is there a bit of religious bigotry in there? Is there a bit of suspicion for what you believe?
I don't know.
And their discomfort with your acting on that belief, or at least allowing that belief to shape what you're involved in here.
I think from a totally sort of earthbound point of view, it's just bad business decision. It's like, well, that's a lot of dough to throw at that. It's not even in the language we understand. And it's going to, like, repel a lot of people. What's the deal? But it's like childbirth. I mean, it's either got to whelp itself out or I just got to do it. It's one of those things. And chips fall where they may, you know.
What about the language? Let's talk about the language for a second. Why in Aramaic?
It's just totally, I mean, once you see a hunk of this all chopped together and people are talking that language, it's utterly riveting for me. Now, I don't understand. I think the image, hopefully, the image will transcend the language now, and you'll be able to tell your story very clearly without the aid of a language that you know. Mm-hmm. However, any knowledge on the subject will kind of give, I'll give you little clues all along the way, and it's also something very real about it, and also many of the people involved in the casting, you haven't seen, you know, Burt Lancaster's not in it, okay? Uh-huh. It's just guys you've never,
not.
It's guys you've never seen before, you know? Jim Caviezel, people may have seen him, but he doesn't even look like himself in this. I mean, he just looks different. He looks like Christ. And so that he is, and a very, if I may say so, the best looking one I've ever seen. I mean, he's masculine. He's like, he doesn't look too pretty or any, you know.
And that worried you about the other ones you've seen, the previous depictions of Jesus, a little too ethereal.
Yes, yeah, exactly, a little effeminate, and just not, they weren't guys that worked on a piece of wood for, you know, however long, you know, making tables and cabinets.
Why didn't you play it?
Oh, I'm too old.
Well, why didn't you play it in the past? If you'd been offered the part, would you have taken it?
No, I was offered the part, and I didn't take it, you know. And it was, it's a funny story. I was in the Savoy Hotel in London at the time. I just had a bad oyster, and I was just coming out of it. It was 4 days later. I got, like, terrible poisoning from this oyster, right? And I was, like, on my knees, you know, not because I was devout, but because I was sick. Mm-hmm. And I was finally snapping out of it, and I got this call from downstairs. They said, you got to switch up to an upstairs room because the room that you're in is booked to somebody else and you've been here too long. Because I was like, all right, okay, I'll move up. So I forgot that I was moving into another room, and I went to with my wrong key to open up the right door, or the wrong door with the right key.
Right key. Something.
And first thing that happened to me, it was like I was like this because I was fiddling with the doorknob and the door all of a sudden opened and Keith Richards was standing there and just staring right through me like, and I'm like, oh, sorry, Keith. And he was like, hey, he just shut the door. He didn't even say anything. He was like, hey. Like, and so I went upstairs and there was a message to go down and see Martin Scorsese in another room in the hotel. So I thought, whoa. So I went, great, great. You know, I really like that film he made, you know, with the Goodfellas. No, it was even before Goodfellas. It was... But he'd done something that was really wonderful. I can't remember what it was. What was it?
Taxi Driver?
Yeah, I liked Taxi Driver, and I thought it was an interesting morality tale. And so I went to his room, and he was doing that film, The Last Temptation of Christ. He wanted me to play Jesus, and I read the book, and I thought, nah, I don't think so. I couldn't quite get into it on that level. Mm-hmm. And it didn't gel with what I thought was accurate or fair, or anything. So.
When I first heard that you wanted to do this in the ancient languages, mm-hmm. and people were saying, what's he doing? They should put subtitles, they should dub it, they should do it in English. I thought for a moment about you personally. Yes. And we share a love of the Latin Mass and the Latin and the universal nature of that language and how everyone could understand that. Was that at all a part of your thinking when you decided to do that?
Well, I think it must have influenced it because I don't go to any other service. I go to the old Tridentine Rite, mm-hmm. and that's the way I first saw it when I was a little kid. So I think that informs one's understanding of how to transcend language. Mm-hmm. Now, initially, I didn't understand the Latin, especially when I got back to going there.
Sure.
I was like, but I understood the meaning,
right,
and the message, and what they were doing. I understood it very fully, and it was very moving and emotional, and efficacious, if I might say so. Uh-huh. But, of course, I understand that language now through repetition.
Right, right.
But it's lost none of its mystery.
Or its power.
Or its power. It's very powerful. And I think that there's a lot of power in
these
having
images.
These dead languages. Uh-huh. Aramaic is, it's not quite dead, nor is Latin. Well, Latin's more dead than it is. But there's still people that speak a kind of a version of old Aramaic.
A form of it, yeah.
Yeah.
How much of that moment, that sacrifice, how important is that moment that you're trying to depict on film to your faith?
To me?
To you.
How important is that?
Right. That sacrifice.
It's everything. It's absolutely everything. I mean, if it wasn't, what would there be? There would be nothing. There would only be world conquest and dominion over every human being on the planet. You know, I mean, hey, why not go for it?
And that sense
of
suffering.
You're going to go out big.
Yeah.
But might as well be hung for a sheep as a lamb, something like that. A stitch in time saves nine. Can you think of any others?
No, I'm out.
Me either. The incarnation, all these things, the message, the complete and total deposit left with us, and the backing up of all those things, and the fruition of all those things is—it's a pretty clear message, I think, and it's unfortunate that more people don't heed it.
Do you feel divinely called to do this thing? Do you feel this is a spiritual mandate of Mel Gibson?
I think it is. As I said, it's going to happen, and I got to go with it. I just got to roll with it, even if it's painful at times, and it is. I think there's a lot of signals to me. I could give you a list of the strange things that have occurred that just shoving me in the right direction. Well, to begin with, I was reaching... Well, you know, all these convents and monasteries are all going out of business and stuff, and they're throwing away all their libraries and all these cool things, so... I actually managed to, like, purchase a library for $1 a book. Nobody else wanted these things, right? So I'm like, wow, I got this huge library. And I found a place to put them and stuff. And I was reaching up for a book one day, and I pulled it out, and the cover caught on the book next to it, and the book next to it fell out, and that was the Emmerich book, right?
Dolores Passion.
And I started looking at that, going, oh, that's interesting. Wow, hey, wow, oh, this is answering a lot of questions I've been asking. And there was that. I was in Philadelphia. And I heard that this guy had this warehouse full of stuff, and I should go and check it out because there may be objects and things that I could use and stuff. So I went to visit the guy, and he had some impressive stuff, and he'd been saving it, things that the church had all thrown away, you know, missiles and statues and vestments and all this kind of stuff, you know, to swap them in for inferior models. But I was there with the guy, and we were yakking about this and that, and he didn't know much about me, and I didn't know much about him. But before I left, he said, here, I have a present for you. And he slapped this tiny little thing in my hand, right? And I said, huh. He says, you know what that is? And I said, well, it looks like some kind of second-class relic, but what is it? And he said, you probably never heard of it. It's just a piece of the habit of Anne Catherine Emmerich, right? And I said, I didn't tell the guy what I was doing or anything, but he just, like, out of the blue gave me that. And the first meeting I had with the writer, we were sitting in a cafe up in some desert in California, inland California, and drinking a cup of coffee under an umbrella on the street. And this woman from France, was in the coffee shop, and she came out to us, and she said, hello. And the writer, he speaks French and Italian and English. That's good.
That's a good one.
I could communicate with him. But they talked about the weather and stuff. I have enough knowledge of French to, you know, understand that, you know. Bello cello and all that stuff. So off she went, and she was looking a bit funny, like she didn't want to go. She was hesitant, and she went back in. And then she came out again, and she approached us very reticently. And we're sitting there looking at her, and she said, do you mind if I tell you something? Like that. And we're like, shoot, mademoiselle, shoot, mademoiselle. And she just looked at the pair of us, and she says, I hope you are not offended, but I just want to say that Jesus loves you. Is that right that I say this? And we just kind of looked at her and went, okay. You know, and she just wandered off. But she didn't know what we were talking about, or, you know, it's stuff like this. Really, and and people, just little signals. There's more stuff than that. I mean, it's just...
Well, I'll save those for the book, but
yeah,
we'll do
ready.
It. Do you consider yourself a Catholic filmmaker at this point in your life?
Well, Catholic being universal,
yes.
I think I've always had a sense of that, as far as artistically.
Big C and little C.
Big C and little C. I think more now than I was. I think it's influenced me more as I get older because...
Man without a face.
Yeah, sure. It was very...
Braveheart.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, we were soldiers and all that kind of
yeah,
stuff.
The
it's
strong,
going more in
yeah,
that direction.
Yeah, there's a strong Catholic sense. There was always a strong Catholic sensibility to my eye in your work.
Yeah.
Before this.
Well, yeah. Well, that's, if you're raised that way, you use and are you use what you are. And it's like John Ford movies are like that, you know. You get a big sense of that out of his films. And they're great films. I mean, they're like some of the best films ever made, you know.
So do you think your films are going to take a more spiritual slant from now on? Are they going to be more personal? Or is this the last religious film you're going to touch? because you know you're going, I have a sense, you're going to go through the blades a few times on this one.
But you think so?
I bet.
Julianne, diced?
Yes.
Ginsu'd?
Ginsu'd, chopped, and fricasseed.
Fricasseed, oh good. I can hardly wait.
If what I'm hearing from my peers is true.
Shut up.
I know.
You're scaring me, Raymond.
I'm not trying to scare you. I just want to...
All right. You know, hey, so what? You only live once.
You're willing to take the shot.
Yeah, you might as well get... It won't be boring.
No, it won't be boring.
It won't be boring.
Final question. How has this thing shaped and changed your faith working on this film?
Oh, it's really... it's really focused it. These past, 4 or 5 months, I mean, is really... really, I don't know how to put it.
It's been a tough shoot for you. I mean, you've had the flu. Everybody here is sick. Steve was coughing on me earlier. Jim's been ill, pulled the shoulder. I mean, everybody seemed that this is not an easy, sweet shoot.
Yeah, no, it's full of discomfort. Jim's actually suffered quite a bit on the cross. I mean, it's like one time when he was being beaten, some of the guys got him with those things. I mean, he had marks and welts on his back. It was like, I mean, he's getting some of it. And sometimes I think, you know, one day he was getting a headache, and it was like, and I thought, I wonder if he's experiencing something a little otherworldly here. I wasn't quite sure, because it seemed to be just coming from nowhere, and it was, but no, there have been a lot of obstacles thrown in the way. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of, what would you call it, poltergeist activity or something, I don't know. A lot of things thrown
spiritual
away.
Stuff happened.
And I understand that it's the other realm warring. I believe that that's a very real thing. And I've taken steps wherever I can to sort of like put on some armor.
Like what?
There's an old priest every day says the mass every day. And then try and just stay squeaky clean myself. That's all. I mean, it's like, that's a tough job.
It's, tell me all about it.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It's like kind of like, you know, detergent for your soul. And just try and just get through this. But having engaged it like that, mm-hmm. and having given such credence to things that are so intangible as the other realms of good and evil, I think it's really drawn the whole thing into focus, and we're all struggling over a piece of film. And it's a piece of film, after all. It's not the real event. But I'm hoping that my hope is that, and it's very strong. Even for me watching it, it's very strong. And I know how it's being put together. Like when it's finally put together, it's going to be 10 times as strong. So that my hope is that anyone who goes in and can manage to stay through it and suffer through with it, you know, they should be given like a little badge. I went to see and I actually sat through to the end reel. Which is, it's necessary to keep it like 90 minutes because it's just, 2 hours of this is just, it'd make you go nuts. But but that they're changed when they leave. I'm seeking that anyone who views it has a profound change.
Jim Caviezel's latest role tested his faith and his stamina. He is playing Jesus Christ in Mel Gibson's project, The Passion. We recently caught up with Jim Caviezel in Rome. Hardest film of your career?
Without a doubt.
In what way?
Physically, there's no rest. In The Thin Red Line, which was very hard, uncomfortable, you know, there were moments where you walk around and Terry Malick would say, go over there and pick your gun up and look into the sunset. Physically, not so hard. This one is torture from the beginning in all forms. If I'm on the cross, you're in incredibly cold conditions.
Yeah, tell me about that. 15 days in a loincloth, essentially, in the freezing cold.
Well, that's just on the crucifix. And we that's just straight crucifix. We did 2 weeks this last week, 10 days of getting on the cross. So we had to shoot all that on a set here at Chinichita in Rome. And the other part was down in Matera, and that was on a cliff. And, you know, I've said, go put yourself across on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and the wind tunnel from the canyon just goes straight up that, we're on kind of like
the sheer
cake,
side, yeah,
and just comes up and right over. They will stick heaters on both sides of you, but it's useless when the wind is just blowing past you. And when you're looking out at the in the distance, and there are, you know, a good 300 people there, mm-hmm. and you see them shaking, and they've got mittens and scarves and jackets on. That I just and there's nothing you can do because your arms are tied up. Mm-hmm. So they move the heaters closer, and you'll start to feel the heat. But when the wind slows down just a little bit, it fries your skin.
Toasted Tootsies.
So I remember just going, so you don't want this movie to be made?
You pulled your shoulder too.
Continually. Separated my shoulder.
Doing what? Carrying, when you were carrying the cross?
Yeah, when you're carrying the cross, it's not just the beam. The Gasmus and Dismas, the two criminals, are both carrying a beam. And some theologians feel that he carried the whole darn thing, and which would made his passion a little bit different than anyone else's. So Mel took, you know, pleasure in making that thing heavy. You couldn't make it too light, or it just wouldn't look right. Mm-hmm. And when I played basketball for years, and I bring that up because I just found it real important to do a lot of you know, clean jerks, lunges, deadlifts, and do wall squats. And I couldn't have done it without it, because literally you're putting all the weight, when you're on the cross, you're putting all the weight on this leg and hooking this one over. And so all your weight goes into your right quad, and you have to hold that for 10 minutes while your arms are, you know, hooked up. And
how did they hook you up?
There's a number of different ways. Are you saying like when I'm...
Yeah, physically, how are you being held up? I mean, I imagine they're not driving nails through your hands. He hasn't gone that far, has he?
We can do a lot of things with special effects with, you know, digital, in which this film is on. We have a really extraordinary makeup crew, one of the best in the best in the business. And some of it I don't even go into, because I just think it takes away from the mystery of the film, mm-hmm. Of what we're doing. But they've built two sorts of platforms, and in between takes, I have to stay up there for most of the time, and they would just put the heaters on and try to, you know, keep me warm, because taking me off would take too long for the setups. And so at one point I was on there for like an hour, and this is in, you know, if you've known what wind chill feels like, this was, you know,
20 degree weather, nothing on.
Yeah, with wind chill, you know, which drops the wind and or drops the temperature, and you're most of the time it's just keeping your core temperature up, and switching from heat to cold and heat to cold that fast, I couldn't keep anything down, so it was extremely hard to getting nauseous all the time, and you're also because the makeup is so severe, you can't see out the right. I can't see the right side of mm-hmm. my face, mm-hmm. so everything's, you know, you're getting hyper focused out of the left eye. Mm. It's, and then the makeup that you're wearing, is all the skin is just ripped to shreds. So if you've, all I can say is, if you've ever had a sunburn, when you're going through the healing stage and you're itching, mm-hmm. put your arms up and want to itch every single part of your body, and you can't, and it's just so it's been a nightmare the whole way through. And some nights I have to wear the entire makeup in bed, so they throw powder over me and I go to bed wearing the stuff, and I just don't sleep. You itch all night. So
why did you decide to do this film? How did it happen?
it's all started with, I had a phone call from my agent saying that Steve McAvity, Mel Gibson's partner, wanted to meet with me on a film called Mavericks. What I later found from Steve and Mel is that was just a front.
A ploy to get you in the room.
Well, to see what I was really like. Mm-hmm. So we met at some picnic table and up in Malibu, and we started talking, and it went on for like 3.5 hours, and then Mel finally brings up this story about this, what he's been thinking about for many years, and how he had found this book, and it was Anne Catherine Emmerich, and he goes, you know how this guy really died? I said, yeah. And he started, it hit me. I just said, you want me to play Jesus? And I just interrupted him. He stopped and he looked at me. He goes, yeah. I said, okay.
You were offered 4 other times to play this role, right?
3 other times. This is the 4th time.
Why this one? Why this one and not the others?
The other times that I was asked, afterwards I felt guilty. I felt like my first response was right, and I just didn't feel right. I didn't want to make something that wasn't the truth, and I felt that the other ones weren't there. And I wanted to know. I asked Mel. I said, Mel, you had a lot of passion when you did Braveheart. Do you have at least that much for this? He goes, more than anything I've ever done. Hmm.
Tell me about the spiritual significance of this for you personally. Has this changed the way, has this changed your faith or deepened it at all?
It's deepened it, but I knew that from the get-go and I was open to that. Mm-hmm. I believe it all started back when I met Ivan Dragicevic doing the Count of Monte Cristos. He's one of the visionaries from Medjugorje. And then my journey into Medjugorje and understanding the stakes and what being Catholic means. and again, that's the truth and sets you free. And that is what I wanted. And it's important for an actor as well, that you got to be drawn to the truth. You can't play the surface. And you and I have talked about that many times about, you know, being actors is who you are, and you want to be able to get there. And the sin that you commit in your life pushes
blocks
God away
truth.
And blocks the truth. Where you mm-hmm. go, or if you go into it, you're held to live with, and no one wants to be around you. And eventually, you get to the end of your life, you're alone, and who do you blame? It's not the devil; it's usually God. And you lose sight of who you really are. You don't see yourself the way God sees you. Who is truly what you are? And so I'm made acting to continue to follow that truth. And Medjugorje pointed me in that direction. And I really believe that was setting me up, getting me ready to play her son. And people have asked me, you know, were you scared getting this mm-hmm. Film? And I said, yes, part of me there. But the other part is this: I'm absolutely honored that he, through Mary, would pick me to play this. And I guarantee you that she has completely architected this whole thing for her son. So there are ways, and every day when I come to play it, you know, when I start to complain of the pain, this pain is gifts into understanding what this is like. And I'll tell you about one part of that was during the scourging scene. Mel had set it up that there was a board behind my back about this big, and they were, the Roman soldiers...
So that it wouldn't hit your back.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So that it wouldn't hit my back, they were to strike that, and and I could see through a mirror when off camera when it was coming. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I had an idea how bad that would hurt, but one of them missed. And it hit me flush right on the back, ripped the skin right off my back, and I couldn't scream. I lost the wind. It was so horrendous that my voice got away from me. I went over and I got the wind knocked out of me. Now, I've played football and had the wind knocked out of me, but I've never had it knocked out from getting a blow to the back. And that the wind got out of me quicker than I could scream. It was bizarre. And I fell over, and Mel was like, "Jim, get back up," you know. But he didn't realize I got hit. So I gathered it together, came back up, and I'm in chains, attached to this pillar, and he missed again. This time it hit me flush, square on the back, and I ripped my wrists right out of the chains, which immediately I skinned myself from my wrist through my hands to my fingers. It's metal. And I screamed, went over, and they poured Solarcaine all over it. But that was the mark that we based all the other scourging marks off of and how it really looked. You can take pictures of it, but to actually see one. And I wasn't struck again after that. But that let me begin to understand, you know, what that could be like. The other part was carrying the cross and receiving a shoulder separation, what that was like. It was, again, bearing that weight and having it cut into your into your skin is just, it's tremendous.
This has gotten enormous ink in the papers of the world.
Right.
And people go, "This is crazy. They're speaking in a dead foreign language. Why? And how do you get over that?"
Well, the film that Mel's doing transcends language. The language of the heart is a language that all of us understand. We all understand this language. She always says, "Pray from the heart." This is going to reach people right in their heart. They're going to start, you know, trying to understand it with their head. Mm-hmm. Doesn't work on this movie. So the story we're telling is through the heart.
What do you make of the violence? A lot of people are saying, "Oh, graphic violence. Why do you want to do this? There's, you know, this takes away all imagination. It's too graphic. It's borderline."
Well, again, it's like, have you ever seen Private Ryan? The opening scene there. And some people say, "Well, that scene changed my life about what I thought war was like." That opening scene, and anybody who hasn't seen it in your audience, I'd recommend to see that opening scene, if just for that. to me, that preaches peace. To understand how horrific and what men like that, what freedom costs, what happens when people sit back and do nothing, when good people sit back and do nothing, evil always prevails. When they are passive.
And you see that here
but
again.
But passive is not peace. You know, Christ is completely a role model in love and peace. He's God. But he took an active role in what love was about, what peace is about, and he paid for it with his life. We're called to the same thing, not just from our word. We're called. Well, God's asking our body. "I need your body. I'm more than just your word, but your body."
And I must tell you, when I first heard about this project and saw the script, I thought, this is pretty hardcore stuff visually. And where's an Aramaic? Who's going to understand this? I just saw a clip, an edited clip. The language is almost incidental. And the violence is done with such taste. To me, it deepened and humanized what has become for many, and I'll include myself in the number, a flat image.
Yes.
Something that we sort of, okay, he died for my sins.
Right.
Or even if we say he died for our sin, appreciating the full gravity of that, it's almost a meditation on the way of the cross.
Well, this is what I'm very passionate about, and it is about our Lord's sacrifice for mankind, for our sins, bringing us back to God, and it's love that did this. And the what I've seen and I see continually in many of the Roman Catholic churches in the United States, I call it, to me is this watered down version of what Jesus Christ did for us. If you were at halftime and during a basketball game or a football game, and you were down 42-0, and the coach said, "Geez, isn't it great that we've got to the Super Bowl or to the World Championship in whatever event it was, and it's just good to be here," as opposed to someone saying to you, another coach saying, "Hey, we're down 42-0. The first 5 minutes, we're going to go after it. We're going to cut that 42-point lead in half. The next 5 minutes, we're going to stew this." And versus, I'm drawn to that kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drawn to wanting to succeed. I want to get to heaven. And this shows clearly that no man has ever suffered this much, that this man came down and really profoundly showed us how to serve, how to love. I think people are going to be, "My Lord would never suffer this much. This is too heavy." No, this is what he did. And I see people pulling Jesus off the cross now. They don't want to see what he did. I see them pulling the tabernacle. You know, it's like the Shakespeare.
Removing it from the church.
Oh, yeah. It's usually right behind you, and you turn around, and not anymore. They've moved it out. It's like, out, damn spot. You know, Shakespeare, get away. Quit breathing down my back.
You seem more viscerally attached, more connected to this, particularly the sacrificial part, than ever before.
We can have arguments, discussions on Jesus and the Virgin Mary and whatnot.
I'm not going to argue with you.
No, I'm speaking to
okay.
people, and they can say what they want. And I can say, "Well, last time I've been on a cross, I'll tell you, it ain't easy." And I understand more about what Mary means to me, how she is the truth.
She's a big part of this film.
Oh.
First time I've ever seen her like this.
She's all the way through this film.
Follows him through the whole thing.
Yes, and our Lord wants his mother to be lifted up. Mm-hmm. And when Jesus is on the cross, he says, "Intatha alu, hu baraki, Yohanan alu, hi amak." This is what he said. Mm-hmm. And he says, "Woman, behold your son, John. John, behold your mother." And I had no idea that John's real mother was at the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, his own biological mother's there, and his
surrogate mother's
there, and
he's,
what is he saying here?
Uh-huh.
So what's that all mean?
Uh-huh.
And people say, "Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. There's no way to the Father except through me." And I said, I know that more than ever now. When I was on that cross and saying this, that is the truth. He is saying the truth. Mm-hmm. He's speaking truth. And what he says is truth. How he acted was truth. Everything about him was truth.
How do you play God? And I guess this has been an enormous challenge for a lot of actors. And Mel and I were talking earlier. Mm-hmm. He said one of the things that attracted him to you is he wanted that quality of the divine, but he was repelled by the former depictions, which were effeminate, in an attempt to get that spiritual quality. Actors sometimes listed toward that ethereal sort of playing. How do you approach it? How is this portrayal different?
Number one is receiving the Eucharist every day. And before I do that, I prepare myself in meditation or through the Rosary, always through Mary, always through Mary. And she brings the Holy Spirit to you. And I go to confession, and the Holy Spirit convicts me on my sins. Once I've done that, then it's very fundamental. It really is. I just try to be the best Catholic.
How do you play that?
Well, you can't play the result. I was telling you earlier, I saw a picture of Our Lady of Perpetual Help, and you see in the picture, Jesus, the baby Jesus is in the arms of Mary, and one of his shoes is missing. And I heard it so eloquently put that the child saw the two angels that came to him with the cross, the nails, and the spear, and showed him his destiny. And at that moment, the child ran into the arms of his mother. And the natural thing for a mother to do is to cover her son. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't. She holds him. She has the hand because she's a part of this. A sword pierces her soul too. She offered her whole body as her son is going to do. And he's asking us the same way. Mel has committed this. I've committed this. And I can commit my whole career to this. I commit whatever I do to all the people that are watching. I commit to their prayers. I can't do it without their prayers. That's the forces of darkness and evil are so powerful right now that I continually ask priests for their masses, continually ask people to keep me in the rosary. Mm-hmm. Going back to the tangible thing mm-hmm. is right down to the Mass every day, receiving the Eucharist, receiving confession, all these things, and praying the rosary very simply all the time.
How is his direction? Tell me about him as a director.
He brings a plethora amount of information from all of his roles mm-hmm. he's ever played, all the brilliant directors he ever worked with, and this film has been sitting in him for 25 years of his
life. He has his own kinetic style. He sort of paints the pictures for you. He's acting things. I mean, he's on overdrive.
That's correct.
You connect with that approach.
One of the best ways I learn is through just watching and movements. And there are words that can't describe emotions. And that's why I think that there are words that's why this film is so perfect. There are going to be actions that are spoken that no word can quite get, but every language understands it. Every culture will understand it from different parts of the world, and that his for our conversion is not just for the United States or Europe. It's for all parts of the world. Jesus is coming to all of us.
Are you surprised by the icy reception from some in the media and Hollywood? This is a 5-time Academy Award winner. They should be tripping over themselves. The follow-up film to Braveheart.
Mm. Well, no, quite frankly. One of the books that we took stuff from, there were two. There was an Anne Catherine Emick book, Dolores Passion of Our Lord Jesus Christ, which is the Passion of Jesus, and the other one was Mary of Agreda's book. Mm-hmm. And in Mary of Agreda's book, there's a part in there where she says, truly following my son, the Virgin Mary said this, truly following my son is, and the word she used is scandal, will follow you your whole life. So we must be doing something right.
You got the scars to prove it, right? Final question. What do you want people to come away from this film with, and why are you doing it?
The film title is called Passion, but it's about conversion. This is about converting. And there are going to be many people that will see this film and say, you know, that's nice. But they know the choice they made. I was telling you this, I watched Schindler's List, mm-hmm. and I also watched the Private Ryan in the opening scene. In both films, during some of the most heinous things that man has ever done to other human beings, there was laughter in the audience. Spielberg was quoted in seeing this, and he was just and I've seen it, and it's it was almost a sadistic laughter. Because some people get nervous and they laugh, mm-hmm. and I told Mel. Mel said that, and I said, Mel, no. This is sadism. I mean, this is really mm-hmm. sick, mm-hmm. And entered into our culture. And I said, you know, we have that in this film. We have the fence riders. We have people that are in the film that take the side of Christ. We have those that aren't doing anything. And at least the ones that love to watch people suffer and get a kick out of it. And those that that group that watched Schindler's List and that group that watched the opening scene of Private Ryan, they can laugh with the ones on the screen and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. They can watch it, and they know where they're at. And the fence riders can watch and sit that. And those that sit there and want to take the life of a martyr, because that's what can happen truly if you follow our Lord Jesus Christ the way Mary would like you to. Hey, heaven is where we all need to be, right? And that's why people right now that are cluing in, that flipped on the TV, that happen to watch us or never watched your show before, they felt called to and they're watching it. And it's about their conversion. And there'll be many people that won't want to see the film just based on that. They'll use the excuse, I heard it's too violent. Mm-hmm. And there'll be those that will be a confirmed atheist that will walk in the film and they'll walk out. And they'll be drawn to saying, why did I leave? And have to be drawn back to the truth. Mm-hmm. This is all we're after. Mel came from an actor background. He's drawn to the truth. That's why he's a great actor. That's why he's a great director.
The Passion of the Christ returns to theaters September 10th through the 17th. It's a Fathom event, and I see it as a remarkable opportunity to share the power of Christ's sacrifice, really with a new generation. I'm taking my kids who've never seen it on the big screen. And it's a way, I think, to prepare your family or your parish to see the resurrection of the Christ, which is coming next May. The Passion returns to theaters next week. For tickets and showtimes in your area, go to fathomentertainment.com. That in-theater re-release contains a special preview of the resurrection from Mel, which I join him for. You don't want to miss this in theaters next week. I'll also bring you a bit of my exclusive interview with a filmmaker from Toronto, where he's editing The Resurrection. This is going to be the biggest cinematic event of 2027. Don't miss next week's show. And make sure you go to Arroyo Grande Show on YouTube. I have something up there you might find interesting. That's all the time we have for now. Be sure to catch us next week. Until then, I'll be scouting the world over for all that is seen and unseen. On behalf of the staff and crew of EWTN News, thank you for watching. I'm Raymond Arroyo. Bye now.